This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Shout out to my sinners. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, Shane Tolt. Thank you for joining me on a podcast where I talk to other lead singers about what it's like to front a band. And today we have a great episode, maybe my favorite one. And I've said it before, but this show, I think it keeps getting better. I think this show keeps growing. I think I'm getting better, finding my sea legs a little bit. 69 episodes in, that's right. 69, baby. 69 episodes. And today we have an amazing episode with my friend Danny Worsnop of Asking Alexandria, who, you know, Asking Alexandria, metal band. He was also singing for a band called We Are Harlot, also another, you know, heavy metal band. Well, now Danny decided to start a country band, a solo country project. And under his namesake. And that's what he's doing now. And it was just released. And the record is actually pretty cool. You talk about out of left field with that one. So it was super interesting to get his take on not just Asking Alexandria and the career he's had there, where he left the band and now he's back, but also where the hell he came up with the idea to start a solo country career. Very, very interesting stuff. Before we get into that, if you want to get in touch with me, of course, please, I love hearing feedback, whether it's you have suggestions for upcoming guests, whether you have a question for me, maybe you just want to, you know, tell me I'm doing a great job. Absolutely. You can get in touch with me. We're on all the social medias. We got a Twitter. It's at LeadSingerSyn. We got S-Y-N. We got a Instagram account at LeadSingerSyndrome. And of course, we have old-fashioned email, which is LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. Now, this show will always be free. You don't have to worry about that. No matter what, I'll be doing this once a week forever. This show will never stop. I will be 85 years old and I won't run out of lead singers. They will still be there. But the show will always be free. However, for some people, maybe one episode a week's not enough. And just for you guys, the super fans of the show, we have started the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Now, how it works is you can pledge some money to the show, help us keep the lights on, help us pay for some of the expenses, as little as $6 a month, and you get access to bonus content, bonus episodes, merchandise. You get stuff sent to your house if you want to. And the coolest part, I think, in my opinion, is the interaction we have with some of the other sinners on the Facebook page, which is really, really cool. We have a great group there. It's a lot of love there. And shout out to everybody on there. We're even planning to have like a retreat at one of the guys' houses in Texas. Like, this is something that really means a lot to people. And it's really, really cool. So again, shout out to my sinners already in the club. I know you're listening. But if you want to join something cool, something special, you meet some people. And of course, I'm on there. I'm doing Q&As once a month. I'm on there interacting with people all the time. It really, really is a cool thing. So I won't talk any more about it. Just please, if you're interested at all and just want to help out the show, you want to help this thing grow, check it out. It is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Also, I have some big news. My solo project, River Oaks, is going back on tour. I did a tour back in December, just 5 shows on the East Coast. It was so much fun. I had such a blast. I mean, playing by myself is a very different experience for me. But I had so much fun doing that I decided to book 5 more shows, this time on the West Coast. Well, kind of the West Coast. I start in Chicago, then I do Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Anaheim, and San Diego. So some California, Las Vegas, and Chicago. So please, if you live in those areas, check it out. RiverOaksMusic.com. I'll be playing a boatload of Silverstein songs acoustic. I'll play all the River Oaks songs that exist. I'll be doing some cover songs. And I also have Mr. JT Woodruff of Hawthorne Heights opening up for me. So that is pretty cool too. So it's going to be a great night, a great evening. Tickets are only like $13. There's also VIP and all that stuff. So again, that link is RiverOaksMusic.com. So let's jump in to this week's episode with seriously one of my favorite people, the always candid, extremely honest, Mr. Danny Warsnop of Asking Alexandria. I should have known the times would get it higher. We can still survive. Life is going crazy, but our heads are still above us. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm doing very well, man. It's been a long time since I talked to you.
It has. I think last time we were in Australia.
I think it might have been. No, actually, you know what? The last time I saw you was at the APMAs.
Yes, that's right.
At like the after party bar. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you remember. I'm surprised I remember. We were both in LA.
Yeah.
As people may or may not know, you've been a guy that's been known to put back a couple drinks.
That is true. That is there's a rumor.
And how's that going for you now? Are you still? I mean, you're so busy. Do you have time to drink?
No. I've stopped. I figured with how busy I am, it was really taken away from the time I could spend putting into work.
Right.
And yeah, it was just consuming so much of me, and I think a lot of it was for the wrong reasons. And now I've been able to put that stuff behind me. Yeah. It's I feel like I owe it to myself to kind of put the time in and really focus on kind of what I'm here to do.
Absolutely, man. And what you're here to do, apparently, is to make a lot of music.
Yeah, seriously, a lot of music,
dude. Well, congrats on the solo country record. Which,
thank you.
Which comes out, or is just came out, didn't it?
Just came out 2 days ago.
Perfect. That is just, I mean, you talk about out of left field. I mean, I'm sure friends of yours, people that know you, you know, grew up with you, they know you must have a deep love for that style of music. However, to the casual, you know, Harlot or Asking Alexandria fan, they must have been like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, it really, I don't think many people saw it coming outside of my inner circle. But it's gone really good. It debuted at number one in the UK, number 10 in the US.
Number one in the UK. Dude, congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. And then, it charted in some other places, but I'm still waiting on the actual numbers to come in. But yeah, it was an incredible first day. Obviously, first week's going to be the actual call to see like where it sticks in the chart, but for the debut there was I had people calling me at 7 a.m. in the morning to tell me, and I literally just landed a few hours prior from my European press junket, so I was jet lagged and like finally getting some sleep, and then at 7 a.m. everyone's calling me, but I mean I've that champagne problems, I can't exactly be too mad about them calling me to tell me I've got a number one album.
Did you have any idea that it was going to be this successful? Because it seems more like a passion project. It seems more something...
I had no idea at all.
Like, you know what I mean by passion project? Like something that you just, hey, I have to get this off my chest. I'll do this record. It'll be something I'm passionate about. And then I'll go back to playing heavy metal. You know what I mean?
As soon as I started this record, it really was finding myself. And I mean, it definitely became instantly that this is it for me. I mean, obviously, I'm still doing, we're working on another Asking Alexandria album, we're working on the Harlot album, both right now. But this is definitely my calling, I think. And I mean, I had no idea it was going to have that much of of an impact right away, but I mean, it was the most incredible feeling.
That's unbelievable. Well, congratulations on that. I mean, there must be, man, I mean, there must be a fear, probably not really from you, but definitely a fear from fans of, of your more, you know, your heavy music that you make. And probably even your bandmates in those other two bands, too, being like, oh, shit, is Danny going to, I mean, you bailed before. Like, is it going to happen again? Is it going to happen again now because of the success?
No.
I mean, it's got to be, I mean, maybe no one would actually, well, fans would go out and say it. Maybe your band members wouldn't say it. But there's got to be somewhat of a fear there. Am I completely wrong?
I mean, I think in the heart, yeah. It's like it's a big likelihood, and I've spoken to them a lot of times. I try and keep them as reassured as possible.
Yeah.
And then in the asking camp, I think we've grown so much since I left the band that even going into this, when they called me to ask me if I'd do it, it was while my record's done and I'm promoting my record and the Harlem record, so they knew exactly what was happening.
Right.
But I think we've reached a point in that band in the career where we don't have to tour all the time, and they don't want to tour all the time. I mean, Ben's a father now.
Yeah.
So he wants to see his daughter grow up. Cameron just bought a house with his girl. So, I mean, they obviously want to enjoy that and make a home and start a family. James just got engaged. So, I mean, he's in that same. So they're not wanting to tour all year round. So it was kind of the perfect situation for everyone. Whereas we do a couple asking tours, put out an album every couple of years, and that's it. We don't have to do anything else because the band's doing well enough and the revenue's coming in, and then everyone has time to do their things. I mean, in the Harlot world, we're about 10 songs into the record. It's coming out great, so hopefully that coming out is enough for them to kind of know that I'm still invested, and that's still something that I... Because Harlot was originally my solo project.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that just as much as anything else. I mean, that's my baby. So, I mean, I'm not under any idea of walking away from that anytime soon.
Wow, man. No, that is cool. I mean, it is really cool. Now, I know you're, 26 now? You're still relatively young for a guy that's had pretty much a full career with Asking and now, you know, moving on to other things. What was the reason for the departure, from Asking? I mean, what really was it where you were just like, I just have to leave this and I have to do something else?
It was a toxic environment. I mean, it was fighting every day between everyone in the band, and it wasn't just verbal, it was fist fights every single day.
God. Wow.
And I mean, mixing that with going through a terrible drug problem, and I mean, a whole host of other things I was going through at the time. It was just really just one thing on top of another. And then, I mean, they wanted to create this album that just really rubbed me the wrong way. And I knew that they didn't really want to make it. They just felt like they had to. And that was just the camel's back. And I was just like, not. I've gone my entire career making music that I love and doing the music that I want to make, and I'm not just gonna turn around on that now. And I had to walk away. I mean, since talking to Ben about it, he was telling me, he's like, the second I saw your name pop up on the phone, I knew exactly what that phone call was gonna be.
Well, did you? I mean, I know, you know, you talked about Ben as being, you know, your best friend, and you know, and I know you guys. He lived at your parents' house. You guys started this band together. You went on this journey together. How hard was that to walk away from him? I mean, when you left, I mean, that not even just as a bandmate, but
at that point, I was so broken and we were so distant. It was really at that point, there wasn't even anything to it. It was, it was just something that had to happen, and I didn't even think twice.
Yeah,
it was that or probably die.
Man, that's intense. But I mean, obviously now you've repaired it. You're back.
Yeah.
If you say that, you really mean, I'm not saying you don't mean what you just said, but to go back, there must have been a radical 180 change in your mentality, in your You know, you talk about drugs. I mean, your drug use, other people's drug use. I mean, there must have been when you say, all right, fine, you know what, Ben, I'm back. But this is the way it's got to be, because I don't want to go down that same rabbit hole, and I don't want us to end up the same way we were. You must have had that conversation.
That is exactly how. That's exactly how it went. And I mean, I went in with terms, and it was that. I mean, I have my own bus, so that I can get away. I mean, just outside of the world of intoxicants and being locked in a bus with people for 30 plus days in a row, I have so much going on business wise that I need space to sit and work that, because I mean, this stuff doesn't run itself. Sure. So it was that, and I mean, if anyone or anyone's guests have drugs around, nowhere near Danny.
Yeah.
And I mean, everyone's grown up to a great degree, and I mean, it's no one's like getting drunk and going crazy before shows. We're very much treating it as a profession, because I mean, this doesn't last. I mean, it's great for those people who are still out playing shows in the 60s and 70s, but not everyone's Keith Richards, not everyone's Mick Jagger. And we have to acknowledge that the chances are we don't have forever in this business. So we got to make it worth it while we're here. I mean, since then, obviously I've stopped drinking. Ben's pretty much stopped drinking now. I mean, it's a very different environment now in the Ask Alexandria world.
That's great. Well, I mean, you probably go through a big change in your life between, I mean, when you guys started the band, what were you, 20? Not even?
No. I mean, we were well on our way to the first gold single when I was 18.
18, and yeah.
I just turned 18. And no one should be throwing that kind of attention and that kind of money at that young of an age. It's just, it's a recipe for disaster. Everyone wonders why all these, like, the child stars in Hollywood go crazy. I mean, I was on a very, very small percentage of the kind of money and attention they're thrown, and I lost my mind. I cannot even imagine what it's like for them. It's you're not mentally mature enough or capable of dealing with it at that age.
No. Well, I mean, when you talk about Australia too, I'll never forget, man. We were at Soundwave Tour, which is an Australian festival tour. Just for people listening that don't know. And since the distances in Australia are so far apart, you have to fly between the shows. So everyone, all the bands stay in a hotel, pretty much usually the same hotel. And then in the morning you get up and you go to the airport and you fly, and it's kind of a pain in the ass. But I remember we had a night drinking. It's a little foggy, that part. But we were out drinking, you, a couple other guys, and I like couldn't keep up with you, and I had to go to bed. And the next day, we're walking through the airport, and I'm pretty hungover, and I hear my name, a lovely, lovely English accent calling my name, and I look over, and there you are sitting in, like, a sushi restaurant.
Yep.
Drinking a beer at, like, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, it never ends.
And you hadn't stopped. You hadn't stopped all night.
No, I remember that night. So here's what you missed out on that evening. This is one of the great There are pictures of this somewhere, and the editor of Metal Hammer has these, but he will not release them and he will not give them to me. So we ended up with this like weird after party nightclub thing, and it ended up at the end of the night being me, the editor of Krang, Sid Glover from Heaven's Basement, and Ville from Him.
Oh wow! And okay, yeah.
Ville had on the dance floor. He's just pouring Jägermeisters down me. It's ridiculous. And then I black out, and I hear the next day and see pictures on people's phones of me and Ville hoisting a midget above our heads and just running out of the door. No, we had no idea who this was. We just saw a small person, grabbed them, hoisted them up into the air, and ran.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Take pictures of it somewhere, and they will not be released to me.
Well, you know, I always got along great with you. I always loved seeing you around, because you're always in a good mood. Like, you're always drinking and you're always happy and you're always like, you know, I never saw the Danny, the like drinking. I mean, drinking problem is a whole different thing, but I never saw you do anything stupid, really. Well, maybe that. I never saw you do anything destructive. Is that accurate? Well, is that accurate, or did you have kind of a dark side when you would get fucked?
Oh no, there was definitely a dark side, but it was almost like a schizophrenia in a way, where it would come and it'd be there for like 30 minutes and I'd be fine. But a lot of it, and I mean a lot of the partying over the years, it was done to just mask problems underneath. So I was the life of the party and everything was great, but on the inside I was just like, I don't want to fucking be here. And it wasn't even just the party. Like, I did not want to be around at all. I mean, the amount of times that I've kind of sat and reasoned with myself, or kind of tried to even talk myself into staying in the business, is insane. There was so many times. I mean, there was one point where I was looking into faking my death and disappearing. Because I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I just want to get the fuck out. I'm laughing.
I'd like picked out this house in fucking Africa and shit. I was just gonna disappear and move to Africa, set up like an offshore bank account that my royalty checks go to, and just fucking vanish.
So why did you feel so like? I mean, you're obviously doing a lot better now, but what was this stemming from? Like, did you have therapy? Was it a depression? Like a, you know, where you just need medication? Like what was going on?
It was the writing of this record that got me, that kind of took me out to the other side, where it was, I wrote this with no intention of anyone ever hearing it, of no intention of it being released. It was purely a way of me talking about the things I was going through and the things I'd been through, because I wouldn't talk about them with anyone, because I'm so closed off.
Yeah.
And then, like, after something's in the past, I can talk about it just fine. Right. But, like, if I'm, like, actually going through it, there's no, you will normally get anything out of me. So I knew that I had to get rid of this stuff, like all this weight on me. So I started writing, and I just wrote these songs. And as I was like tracking them in, my producer was just, I mean, he sat me down and was like, you can't write songs like this and keep them to yourself. Like, you have to share this with the world. Like, right. This is amazing. These are amazing songs, and you can't just hold on to them. Like, you've got to let them out. So, I mean, we took that and ran with it. And by the end, I had an album that is the thing I'm most proud of that I've ever done in my life. And I managed to shed all of this baggage and move forward and kind of get a new lease on life and be able to forgive myself for things and forgive other people for things and just really put everything in the rear view and start fresh.
And I got to ask you, I mean, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. Your voice, I mean, damn, dude. Like, a lot of people are gonna be like, where the fuck did you learn to sing like that? I mean, the performance and the record, I just listened to the whole thing, and it's tremendous. Was that a different approach for you? Obviously in the studio, but even just writing like that, how was that whole thing?
Writing was the same as I always work. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff, even the heavy stuff, I write originally just sing it. And then just move the melody or the cadence wherever it needs to be. In terms of recording the album, it was something I'd never done before but always wanted to, where I pretty much did the entire album live. Recorded through an amazing analog Neve at my producer Jim Coffin's place, and really just made it so raw. And there are so many bum notes, and I love that. And it sounded like a person went in and sang that record. And like, it's everything isn't perfect, but everything isn't supposed to be.
Well, no, and you know what's funny, man? I'll be completely honest. I listened to the first track. No, actually, no, it wasn't the first track. It was the first single, one of the singles I heard. And it starts with a guitar, like an acoustic guitar riff.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure there's like a mistake in the riff.
Yeah, the first note on the album's wrong. First note I sing on the entire album is wrong.
I didn't notice. The vocals to me sounded really good. I didn't notice the mistakes in the vocals, but I noticed that guitar jumped out at me, and I was like, whoa. And I was like, that's pretty ballsy, man. Obviously, like, this day and age, everything can be perfect. That's not a challenge anymore. Like, you know what I mean? We're not kids making a demo in our basement.
It's almost now like near impossible to find a record with flaws on it. But I think it makes everything. So I think that's why I'm so drawn to all these more heritage acts and like old records, because there's flaws in them, and that's like that's where the songs get their soul. The very first note I sing on the album's flat, and when I got the masters back, my producer was like, "Dude, we should probably redo that." I was like, "No, that thing being wrong sets the tone for this entire thing."
There you go. Man, that's cool. That's really cool. I really, really like that. And I kind of touched on it earlier, but obviously this is very new. The record's just come out. People knew about the project for a while. Has there been some serious, serious shit talking from the metal, like the metal fans? Has everyone been friendly?
No, there's more shit talking from like just dummies who talk shit to talk shit. To be honest, a lot of the metal fans and the people who I thought would jump all over this, like they've been the most accepting. They're like, he's really like showing some diversity and like really kind of exploring shit. We respect that. My favorite review of this album so far probably will be of all time. It was either Lamgo or Metal Sucks, who have never said a nice thing about me ever.
Right.
The end of the article just said Danny Walsnop might not be horrible at this country music thing, and that's like the most amazing thing ever. That's the nicest thing they've ever said.
I know. Actually, yeah, especially Lamgo. I mean, they're fucking ruthless.
Yeah, that's like the Grammy of Lamgo.
Incredible, man. Well, fuck, that is just so good. I know I keep saying it over and over again, but I'm really, 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 I think that's rad. And, you know, I've always been a fan of yours, you know, more as a person than anything else. So it's really, really good to see you doing so well.
I appreciate that.
Let's talk a little bit about how you got into all this thing, this whole thing. Being 18 years old, being pretty much on a tour bus almost immediately in the U.S., you guys had success very quickly. Having the pretty much everything you wanted, being that young, and just going crazy. Now, I want you to take me up in your life to where you got to that point. And, like, how was your upbringing with your family? Is your family still important? Is your family still supportive of everything you're doing? Where is everything stemming from? I just want to really get the history.
I started playing music when I was around 3, and I started writing songs at that time also. There are still files somewhere, like lyric sheets I'd written and songs I'd written with my age on them. I think the youngest one was 3 years old. And it was basically a complete rip-off of Earth Song by Michael Jackson. If you're gonna start somewhere ripping someone off, Michael Jackson ain't a bad place to start.
No, that's a very good place to start.
Yeah. I started playing music at 3 and writing songs at 3. Picked up the trumpet and the violin and then started playing in a traveling orchestra when I was 10.
Wow. Okay.
And then graduated high school at 16 and left home. Slept in a train station while I was in college, also studying music, not really attend very much. I spent most of my time across the street in the graveyard smoking marijuana. And then after I think about 7 or 8 months, basically said, screw this, I'm moving to America. And any money I had scraped together, got a plane ticket, and Ben and I landed in New Jersey and lived in a Walmart parking lot until the record deal.
That's insane, man. That is absolutely crazy. You really seem like a guy that just like says, hey, I'm going to do this thing, and you just do it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the only way I've ever been, and it's worked for me thus far, and I urge other people to do it as much as possible. Everyone overthinks everything, and I think they get in their own way by doing that. So I feel more people should just, if they want to do something, just do it. Don't sit and talk about it. Just go and do it. I mean, I was sick of Los Angeles, and I woke up, packed all things into the car, and drove to Tennessee that day.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, I really do respect that. So, you know, you talk about being such a young musician and, you know, you have tapes and stuff. What's your relationship with your parents like?
We haven't spoken in quite a few years.
So was that a fallout from your just kind of your, what's the word, being so spontaneous? Was that hard for them to handle?
Well, I mean, we were never particularly close, even when I was like a young, young child.
Yeah.
So I was always very much a lone wolf and kind of away. Like I was separate. I was never in the family. I was just kind of like I was there. They birthed me, yeah. And then I kind of took it from there. So I was always very independent for as long as I can remember. So when, like after I left England, it was like just then a completely clean slate. Like my past was behind me, future is ahead of me, and that's how it was.
That's crazy, man. Are you an American citizen now, or how does that work? Like,
not yet. I've got to convince Miss Sarah Ross to marry me, but then I'll get it.
Nice. That's great, man.
It's okay. She sat shaking her head, knowing that she's just a ticket to a passport.
Oh, is she right there? Yeah. Tell her I said hello. Tell her I said hello. That's terrific. Oh, man, that's cool, man. You guys must just be celebrating everything.
Yeah.
When you left asking, and you had I'm sorry?
We celebrated by cooking a steak and watching a movie at home. Life got really different when I stopped drinking and doing drugs.
Right. No, fuck. I mean, that's great. I mean, why not, right? What movie was it?
I don't know what we watched. I don't know. Probably some horror movies. Like, see, we've got this weird dynamic where, like, she sits and watches all these horror movies and stuff, and then I'm over, like, cleaning in the kitchen and stuff. It's an odd dynamic. There's a weird power shift in this relationship these days.
No, that's because, you know, when you go on tour and everyone's, like, cleaning up after you, you know, and you're like this guy, you know, like, so now you come home, you know, you're getting your time in. I mean, it was like the same thing for many years with it, with a girl I was with too. I did all the cooking, all the cleaning, and I had no problem with that. That was fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more than anything. It's just I've never had this. Like my home life, even in the past, was always based around getting fucked up. So like being kind of relaxed and fully in a relationship now, it's like I've never really had this, so I just dive in completely.
That's terrific, man. That's really, really terrific. So I want to ask you a little bit about asking, and I know when you left the band, you kind of already explained it, but, and I know you were so over it, and you were so like, there wasn't even a second thought, I'm gone, but how was it seeing a guy replace you singing your song, singing your words? Was that weird for you? And do you have a relationship with Dennis?
I think replace was a strong word. He was just keeping my seat warm. I think honestly, like I don't know the kid, so I have no opinion on him as a person. I mean, when people start telling me stories and like sogging and stuff, my response is usually like, I don't want to know. I don't care. Like that's none of my business. I met the kid one time on a tour in Russia, and he got a picture with me outside a hotel. That's the extent of my knowledge of him. I mean, it was the only weird thing was, and this was like, it was like almost a legal thing. He was lip syncing over my stuff for a minute, and that obviously did not rub me or my lawyers the right way. And they jumped on it before I did. They were like, hey, just so you know, we sent him a cease and desist because he's lip syncing all your stuff. Like, I hadn't seen them or heard them with him. So it was at the time I was just like, yeah, just make sure he's not using my stuff. And then I don't care.
Oh, my God. So your recordings that you'd made previously, they were using the tracks and he was lip syncing over it. So it was your voice coming through the PA from the record or whatever.
In the beginning, yeah, and then I believe he went in and tracked some to lip sync to after that. But that's hearsay. I don't know the extent of the truth of that. But
wow, that's cool. That's something, man. That's crazy. Well, I'm sure Ben knows.
I'm sure he does. All I know is I ain't never lip synced a thing in my life.
No, that's crazy, man. No, I mean, there is like backing tracks and all that shit. We see, the thing about that I like about this podcast, I like about this show, is the amount of truth that we spill. And I like you because you've always been honest.
Yeah.
So that's an important thing. But I mean, how do you feel about bands using backing tracks? Like, I mean, is that something that you've done? Is that something that you are against now? Or is it something that your opinion's changed over the years?
I mean, I don't like when bands do it. I get if they do. Like, there are just people who cannot do what they do in the studio. And I think it's easy to look back and say, well, back in the old days, like, everyone had to be amazing because there was no such thing as backing track shit. No one was, like, they weren't all amazing. Most of them were terrible. We just only remember the amazing ones.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, the percentage of good to bad is probably the same. Just now, they have a way of hiding it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. Whatever. Like, without them, the greats aren't great. I mean, I've never done it. I think one of our sound guys had like harmonies and stuff in the backing tracks before, which I don't like. But if they're gonna do it, like, don't double my voice or anything. I mean, I know a lot of people, especially in the, like, big arena world,
they have
a double of their vocal line going at all times. And, you know, it makes it sound huge, but there is a level of dishonesty to it. But then also, at the same time, it makes you be, you have to sing perfect, because otherwise you don't match up to your double.
True.
That's so true. I mean, it does, at least that, like, comes with its own challenges, and you still have to be a good singer. But yeah, the people who lip sync, they can go fuck themselves.
Straight up, man.
I think it's why you're there. If you can't do it, why are people coming? Why are people coming to watch you, like, not even do it?
Yeah, no, I don't know. And like somebody like Bieber. I mean, I know like Justin Bieber, and I don't. You know, I'll take him or leave him. I don't think he's terrible. I think he's got some good songs. It's fine. But somebody like that, like, the guy can sing. Why doesn't he just do it? Just do it.
Yeah.
And if you're not great, you're not great. But everybody that goes and sees the show knows he's not singing. You know?
Yeah. I think at that point it's more a theatrical performance than anything.
Right.
And that's fine. Like, if that's what people are going for, great.
Right.
But I mean, when people are going to, like, see these rock bands and stuff, people ain't going for a theatrical show because there's no theatrical element to it.
Not really.
There's no dancers or stuff flying around. You're just watching a dude hold a microphone. That's it.
Yeah.
He's not even doing anything with it. You're just watching a guy hold a microphone.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. And if you take the human element out of it, if you take the, you know, as we talked about earlier, the imperfections out of it, then what's the point? It's like listening to the record in your room just a lot louder.
Yep, exactly.
With a lot more friends over. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Dude, your statement when you rejoined the band was kind of fucking hilarious. And I, first of all, I know you, and I know that you just kind of don't care. And you want to get a rise out of people, and you want people to talk about it, I assume. What were some of the reactions that you heard about that? Like,
it was hysterical.
Like, he's still, I mean, like, he's lost his mind. I mean,
yeah. Well, he's still lost his mind. I mean, no, you're exactly right. I like getting the rise out of people, like fucking people. And at the end of the day, however serious I take my job, I don't take it very seriously at all.
Right.
Like, this entire world is a fucking joke to me, and there is so much dumb shit going on. I think it's hysterical to get people worked up about some dumb shit I said about something that doesn't matter while there's so much, like, actual shit going on. And then I'm the thing that they're talking about. It's just hysterical to me. It's just...
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. You're right. I never really quite thought of it like that, but you're right. Is it true? I read somewhere that you either wrote a book, like an autobiography, or you're working on it. Is this true, and is this ever going to see the light of day?
It's been in the works for a few years. I mean, obviously, during, like, my big old drug spiral, I wasn't doing much writing. That got in the way of my drug time. It's something I come back and forth on and, like, add to here and there. One day it'll be a thing, I hope. It's still probably a few years in the works yet. I mean, every time I think, okay, this is the point in my life where it's like, okay, the story up until this point, that's great, that'll do it. And then I think something batshit crazy will happen, like I'll rejoin Asking Alexandria or something, and then I'm like, fuck, well, this is a whole other chapter in the book. Like, I can't end it here. So it just keeps going. And then
that's right. You're only 26.
Yeah. At some point, I'll get carpal tunnel or something. I won't be able to write anymore. So that'll be the end. And then I'll release it.
Well, I mean, a lot of people that do books, like, you know, a lot of it's not even really like them writing it themselves. They just do interviews, you know, with an author or whatever, and the author basically writes down the stories.
Some of them, and this is pulling back the curtain a little bit. Some of them aren't even fucking things. I know one person, and I'm not going to say his name because he'll probably sue me because he's that kind of fucking person, who released his book. And not one event in it is true. Nothing actually happened. He just told a ghostwriter to make him look cool. So a ghostwriter just sat and made shit up for like 500 pages.
That's crazy. Is it a success? It must be a successful guy.
Yep, very, very, very successful.
Wow, that's insane, man. That's not cool. That's the thing, man. Like, there's the old expression, "Don't believe everything you read." And never forget. Never forget that expression, because it's true, man. How much shit is just out there that is absolute just... They're not even... Just bullshit. Just bullshit.
Yep. I mean, especially in press, like, 90% of it is bullshit. Or it's... I mean, and this is something that, I mean, we've both suffered from, I'm sure, multiple times, where it's... There can be a quote, which is something you said, but they'll pick out like four or five words from the middle of something you said that without everything else is a completely different statement. And I mean, in press, that's 99% of what they do. They just pick select words to make something look the way they want it to look.
Well, that's partly why I love the podcast format, because we can talk like we've probably been talking for about 35 minutes. It's unabridged, like, and you can go on and on and on and explain things, and everyone's going to get the full story, and they're going to hear things that they'd never heard before, and that's why I love this format. But I mean, the worst people, the worst culprits, are press in the UK. I mean, it's terrible over there.
Oh, they were exactly who I was referring to. I had to send one a threat to take him to court a while back. They're the worst.
Yeah, I mean, your success kind of came. I mean, early on came. It was America first. I mean, you guys struck it big in America first, and the UK came much later. I assume you're probably still, I mean, at least asking, is still bigger in the US than in the UK. Is that true?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's obviously been, 3 years since I've been over to the UK with asking.
Right.
I know Harlot is bigger in the UK and Europe.
Yeah.
And I mean, we do good in the US, but UK and Europe, it was sellout shows every day.
Right.
And asking always was bigger in the US until the end of my run with them. That it was pretty much equal. And then I mean, we'll see where it's at now. I mean, I leave for a European tour with them in like 9 days.
Oh wow!
So we'll see where it's at then.
That's very cool. No, that should be a lot of fun. What's going on? What's the next plan with the country stuff? Obviously, the record's doing great. I mean, you must have some plans to do some shows. Have you done a lot of shows at all, or not yet?
I've done three shows and then two in-store performances, because I've been so busy that I mean, I haven't really had time to take it out and play. So I'm finishing up auditioning musicians right now. I'm going over to the UK and Europe in July. June, after I get back from this acting run, I'm doing a bunch of US radio runs, just kind of promoting the single.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'm booking in tours and take it out for the rest of the year. Outside, I mean, I've got a couple of movies I'm doing, but outside of that, I'm touring it for the rest of the year. I'm recording music videos nonstop for it. I want a video for every song.
Cool. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's full on. I mean, I'm already starting work on the second one. Gonna be going in and out of the studio, starting recording in a couple of weeks.
That's crazy, man. That is absolutely wild.
And then on top of that, writing and recording the new Asking album, finishing up the Hollywood album. It's nonstop. I'm trying to petition for some more hours added to each day. I'm gonna need them.
Yeah, can you hook that up? Like 27 or 28 would be great.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you still found time to, you know, hang out with your girlfriend and eat a steak and watch a movie. So
yeah,
look at this guy, man. Look at this guy. He's doing it all.
I'm running on a hot 3 hours sleep a night to get it all in, but I think I'll do it now while I can, while my body bounces back.
That's right.
And then later on in life, I can lay back and enjoy. I can smell the roses.
You're almost like making me want to quit drinking. Almost making me want to quit drinking because I know I'll have more time.
I'll still have a glass of wine here and there, but
yeah,
it was really soaking up so much of my day. Like there was a strong like 8 or so hours dedicated to drinking every day.
No,
and it's like the amount of stuff I can get done in those 8 hours is insane.
It's true.
Like I'm coming out with a line of guitars and a tequila company, and I mean I'm writing with some other people and. Like, I can get that stuff done now. It's not just like I come up with a plan here and there. Like, it's like in full swing now.
It's fantastic, man. That's amazing. Your energy level's insane. I mean, it's true what they say, though. Like, Joel from Amity Affliction was on the show, and, you know, he was basically like, I was either fucked up or hungover all the time.
Yep.
And, you know, that's no way to live and no way to be productive. And now he's sober. Congratulations to Joel. And he's the same thing. He's like, I got so much damn time in the day, you know, and, you know, to be creative. And that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I mean, I will attribute, and this is a free endorsement. They're not even paying me for this. I will attribute a lot of my newfound energy to my new espresso machine that I am currently drinking about 8 of a day. If anyone wants to figure out how to run 8 businesses at once, buy an espresso machine, you'll be just fine.
Absolutely. Hey, you never know who's listening to this shit, man. You never know. Oh, dude, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I mean, fuck, I think we did it. Like, it's awesome. Just a little bit of a shorter episode, but I don't have anything else to ask you because this is, like, action-packed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
We keep it quick. We keep it full-on and informative. Get out all the pertinent information, a bunch of fun stories, and have a blast along the way.
Well, you got lots of shit to do, man. Like, you got to get out of here. There's so much going on. Have more espresso. I need a fucking coffee too, man. No, dude, I'd love to do another talk down the road when you got more things to talk about.
Yeah.
Before you go, what's the movie? You mentioned the movies. What are you acting? What's going on with that?
Yeah. I got into acting a few years ago and fell in love with it. I have a movie called The Devil's Carnival 3, which we'll be filming for at some point this year. I'm still waiting for information about that from the director, Darren Bousman, who's a genius. And then I have another one, which is currently going through rewrites, which is my first lead role. And I would say the title of it, but it's going through rewrites, so it may change.
Cool, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
that's great.
But yeah, then reading for some new TV shows and hopefully land one of those. And yeah, just add another time-consuming thing to my life until I slowly wither and die.
Insane, man. I thought I had a busy life, and this is just wild. So, hey, man, thanks again for your time. Enjoy your day, and all the best with everything coming up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Danny.
Right, good talking to you, buddy.
So there it is with Danny. I have to say, man, I just listened to that whole thing again. You know, I recorded a couple weeks ago and I listened to it again. And there's actually things that I missed when I was talking to him just because there's just so much information. And I don't know if he's talked about all this stuff so openly before, but it was pretty special interview. And we knocked it out in like 45 minutes. And at the end, I was like, well, hey, what else am I going to even ask him? So really cool. Thanks so much to Danny for doing this. And you guys, I mean, I'm not a country music guy at all, by any means. I don't really know anything about country music, but Danny's record is pretty damn cool. So as always, I will leave you with a tune. I'll leave you with a country tune for the first time, I think, in Lead Singer Syndrome podcast history. Here it is, Danny Warsnop, I Got Bones, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
Like a moth to a flame, that neon light must have been calling our names. Cause here we are, drinking down doubles, drowning out the same kind of troubles that brought us here in the first place. We can take another hit, bring on the sticks, take me to heaven with one hell of a kiss. Let them throw their stones and gonna sow our own. No words, even less about what you might have heard. Baby, I got God, yeah, it's crystal clear. My intentions, let's disappear. I got oh so much to show ya. We can take another hit.